Hello everyone and welcome to Ask Margot. I'm Margot de Coatsworth and this is the place you can get your difficult questions answered. If you're feeling stuck, sick or small, that is less than you're worth, talk to me and we'll find a way forward. You can send your questions in to admin@coastaccessradio or to me at Margot Unlimited under the contact tab, Margot with a T. We do love to hear from you. By way of introducing myself today, I'd like to talk about my kind of mission, I suppose, in life, which is my purpose for maybe being on the planet and my purpose for being here. And that is, I want to see all of us step into our own power to bring about change in our lives. My particular interest is in health, physical health, and I do most sincerely believe we have seen a lot of evidence of people who are prepared to change their mind in order to change their body and therefore change their life. It must happen in that order because our minds are in charge of what's going on in our bodies. And if our bodies are not happy and healthy, our mind is a place we must start at to change that, to bring in the harmony and balance that we need and we deserve. Because if we don't have our health, nothing else really matters. It is of supreme importance to us, health that is, and once you know that the way to change your body is via your amazing mind, you will indeed make a change in your life. Let's restate that. If you use your mind to change your body, you will absolutely change your life. We are surrounded, unfortunately, by very fatalistic expectations of what life dishes out to us. You will have to live with this pain. You have a broken body and it will not go back together again properly. Your mother had it, so you'll have it. You will fall. You will wear out. You are likely to get something that begins with the letter C. Your mind will forget. Your cough will carry you off. I say, that's enough of that. Who is in charge here? Who has the right, other than us, to decide if we live a healthy life or not? We have to stop meekly, weakly being carried off to the grave before our time and in no fit state to go anywhere. We need to put our foot down. We need to put our collective feet down and stop accepting decisions of our own lives that someone else has given us, someone who may not see that there is another possibility. I want to acknowledge doctors, how great they are and what wonderful work they do. But I know a famous doctor once, and she said to me, doctors are not God. Doctors are fantastic, and we love what they do for us. We need them. They're amazing and dedicated. But please don't let someone else decide what's okay for you and the outcome of your life. I read a clever book once where the man concerned got some kind of disease, a rare and tricky one. He asked his doctor how many people survived it. The doctor said only 3%. The man immediately chose not to be of the 97%, but to be the 3%. And he told the doctor, I am that 3%. The doctor was confused and said, cautioned him and said he could not be the chooser of that. But the man decided that he could choose, and who would make that choice for him other than him? He chose, and in the end, of course, that's why he wrote the book, he was one of the 3%. Who would let a percentage make that decision for them? I hope our life, both the quality of it and the date of the finish line, is worth looking more closely at in terms of our personal power to influence the outcome for us and our health. We need to look at the science of how our mind influences our bodies. That is a growing area of understanding. We need to say what's been accepted is no longer acceptable. We need to believe we have a right to great health, to restore it and to maintain it. We need to understand the power of our brilliant minds, beginning with our subconscious blueprint. We can take back control there, and then we can dictate what happens from then on. Well, you can tell by the way I'm speaking that I'm hot on this subject. It's my personal challenge to actually talk about it a lot and see if I can shake the way we've been doing things and raise our expectations a bit. Okay, now to our questions, which is why you're here. Our first question today is from Bella. She said to me she's having great difficulty in feeling gratitude for things that she just doesn't feel grateful for, and she wants to know how she can change that because she just can't get past things, certain things that have happened, and she's still angry about. And she understands the benefits of gratitude, but can't seem to get them to kick in with this particular issue. Hi, Bella. It's interesting, isn't it, that we can be grateful for things that we are happy about, a lovely day, our family, great friends, but we find it challenging and sometimes even impossible to be grateful for things that have happened in our lives that are still a bit of a constant rub for us. I read a book by a woman called Melody Beattie, and it was about creating miracles in your life. One part of it was about this whole area of being grateful for what we are ungrateful for and how to actually implement that change. So I'd like you to consider this, Bella. Melody has a kind of formula that she uses, and it's very cool once you get your head around it. It goes like this. You say to yourself, I am so grateful that the pain, loss, fear, lack, anger, disappointment, whatever applies to you, of whatever the situation was, is not greater than the joy, relief, abundance, love, whatever applies, that I feel when, and then you add whatever the silver lining is. Now, I know that sounds quite a lot to get your head around, so I'm going to give you some examples which I think express this perfectly. Here we go. I'm so grateful that the pain I feel at the loss of my husband is not greater than the joy I feel having shared so much of my life with him. Do you get that? Or, I'm so grateful that the anger I feel at the betrayal of my friend is not greater than my belief that I will have many more close and wonderful friendships in my life. Do you see how this is working? Or, I'm so grateful that the fear of being lonely is not greater than my unshakable desire to have a life full of friends and family. Or, I'm so grateful that the lack that has riddled my past is not greater than the unlimited possibilities for abundance in my future. Do you see how there is a kind of satisfaction in, first of all, voicing the bad thing, and then there is relief and a shift when you say that the bad thing is not greater than the strong belief or even just a glimmer of hope for the good thing. If you focus on how you feel when you make the statement, you will feel that upward lift in your energy, and that's opening the door for the change you want. I'm going to keep going because I think once you get this principle in action, it'll help you to adopt it in your own life. Here's another example. I'm so grateful that the sick feeling I've had in my stomach when I think of how my partner treated me is not greater than the joy I have in the beautiful children we made together. Or, I'm so grateful that even though I feel crushed that I was fired from my job, this feeling is not greater than knowing I will have another opportunity to flourish in my work and be recognized for my capabilities. I'm so grateful that though my treasures have been stolen, the awful feeling of being robbed is not greater than acknowledging the real treasures of my life, the things that can never be stolen. I know that was quite a list, but they're all a bit different, and it just goes to show how you can apply this principle in your life. When you do this, you are opening up and allowing your mind to deliver anything that needs clearing and releasing. When I did this the first time, I was driving and a surprising number of little annoyances popped up into my mind. I just spoke to each one of them and put it through this gratitude filter that I've just described to you, and it felt good. Don't dwell on them or chew over them. Just speak to the situation and let it go. Don't also spend an inordinate amount of time on this. Just minutes, maybe 10, maximum. And then you've done enough until the next time something floats up in your mind and you need to address it with your grateful statement and the positive twist. Even if you don't feel positive, I always think it's human and very relevant to use humour to respond to the many negative things in life that can be challenging. And if you exaggerate it, it'll make you smile, and that in itself lifts your state. You can say, for example, I'm so grateful that even though I was furious when she said that thing to me, I'm so proud that my desire to hurl that cake at her was not greater than my self-control. Do you see? It changes your state and it doesn't allow you to lean into the negative thought. So that's when it becomes a negative state, once you lean into it. This means you are managing yourself and your state for your own benefit and well-being. This also works with your other person, your special other person. When they do something that upsets you, try saying, I'm so grateful that even though we don't always agree, our differences are not greater than the happiness you bring into my life. If you say that out loud to them, that will instantly diffuse a situation and it will soften their attitude to you because you've stated how much you value them. And saying that that is more important than whatever the incident or point of difference was will work. Try this and see how you go. I suspect all the fight will go out of them and they will mirror the same conciliatory sentiment to you. Then you have a strong place to move forward from. I'm actually glad this question has come up today for myself because it's something I need to practice as well. I know that's going to help, Belina. Do let us know how you go. Our next question today is about imposter syndrome. Bob wrote in and he said he struggles with this and he's met so many people who also feel that they are imposters and that they will somehow be caught out, and he wants to know how to deal with that. Thank you for this question, Bob, because I know, I agree, there are a lot of people who feel like this. I wrote an article once called What's Your Cover Story? And it was about exposing imposter syndrome. When I heard the phrase ages ago, your cover story, it struck me that we all have a kind of cover story, the face that we present to the world. It may be one of being smart or quick-witted or being in control or being super confident. It seems, in fact, that 70% of us are not at all confident or as confident as we appear to be. 70% of us wear the label imposter syndrome. I have an absolute aversion to the term and concept of suffer from. So I will never say suffer from imposter syndrome, because if you suffer from something, it identifies with you in a kind of absolute way. So I like to say wearing the label of, because we can take that label off. Suffering is not something we want to identify with. It makes us the victim. Taking a label off gives us the choice. So this label of imposter syndrome that pervades and undermines our sense of self is clearly dominating in our society. Maybe it always has. I've done some research, and if you look online, a simple search will show you how to reveal that you have imposter syndrome, how to identify it, how to live with it, how to mitigate the effects of it, on. And I despair that we expect so little and accept so much that we don't want. Why doesn't anyone say, let's get rid of imposter syndrome, rather than this is how you live with it? We are all overdue for putting our foot down and saying no more to labels in life that we're living with that we just don't want. We're living with anxiety, and we don't expect it to leave anytime soon. We own depression by calling it my depression. Why would we do that? We have dumbed ourselves down and accepted so little when we are worth so much. This may sound a bit unfeeling, but we are incredible human beings, and we are designed for so much more. I say enough to the labels that we don't want, that do not serve us. Let's just choose the ones that encourage us, uplift us, and acknowledge who we really are. We are amazing, multifaceted, multi-talented, creative, smart beings, and we need to acknowledge and affirm that in ourselves and in each other. I do know why we have become dumbed down. It's because we think there isn't actually a way out. But just because 70% of people haven't found it yet doesn't mean it isn't there. I like to use the analogy of a blind man who says, there's no sun. Despite what the blind man thinks, the sun never fails to rise and shine. The thing is, he just can't see it. It's time for change, everybody. Time to ramp up our expectations. Time to see our worth. Time to change our cover story so that it matches who we really are. I probably should add that sometimes this takes a bit of subconscious investigation to find out why we don't see ourselves as capable as we are. You can always contact me if you want to look at that more closely. Thank you for that question, Bob, because 70% of us have needed to hear that answer. Our next question is from Betty, and she has a question about equality for women and men. She's a bit sick of being shuffled into second place in more areas of life than she cares to acknowledge, and she would really like to get a handle on that and, of course, see some change. She wants to know if I have any ideas on this issue. I do, of course, Betty. I personally quite like the male-female dance and the balance of that. But it's a tricky one to achieve, and even in the deeper issues of life, the essential us, the spiritual us, if you like, there is no gender. So no man has a higher place than a woman in any way in our lives, in any aspect. We have different roles, but no one is here to lord it over anyone else. We do often experience being in second place to men in the workforce, in business, in most areas of society. It's a bit obvious that women should be paid the same as men for the same jobs. I'm not even going to go there. We do know as women we want equal opportunities, equal consideration, and we campaign for awareness and for change. We tell men the balance is uneven and it needs to change. But we know that where both partners are working, the burden of care and management at home still primarily falls on women. We have tried to tell men that this won't do, but they don't like to be interrupted when they are busy watching TV at the end of their very demanding day. So we're still working on that one. We teach our daughters to stand up for themselves and their rights, and we certainly hope that our sons see us as equal and not greater than, and they, of course, are not greater than. Sometimes we tell the girls, but we forget to tell the boys. That responsibility lies with both parents. It can't work unless the children get the message from both perspectives, from their mother and their father, or from the female roles in their life and their father figures. My children, both boys and girls, have been encouraged from birth to see themselves as great human beings, valued and appreciated for who they are. I've seen my daughters have a much stronger, clearer sense of themselves than many of the women of my generation or my mother's generation. And according to one of my daughters, to many of her generation as well. So we are telling businesses, we are telling employers, we are telling husbands and partners, and we are telling our children this message of equality. So what's missing? Maybe the missing part is what we are telling ourselves. We know what we want. We talk about it. But sometimes we speak of it as something we desire and not always something that we have as of right. Now, don't get upset with me, but just consider this. We say we are equal to any other person, male or female, but often we don't actually live like that. I'm not talking about when one does the ironing and one washes the dishes or one does cooking while one chops wood. Those are just jobs and subject to individual choice and maybe strengths. I'm talking about decision-making responsibilities, preferences. These must be made on merit and not on gender. I actually am pro-equality of the individual because that's where our power lies. Because we are people, we are persons, we are individuals before we are male or female. And perhaps that's the way we can get from A to B, from here to true equality, by stepping over the whole gender issue and focusing solely on equality of the individual. Do you remember when there was a big flurry and we were all focused on that thing that everybody was posting about Black Lives Matter? Of course they do. But I always wanted to reply and say, actually, all lives matter. I know attention needs to go there, the same as it does with equality with men and women. But we must remember not to get so focused on the male-female thing and not to get so focused on the colour of our skin thing that we forget that we should be purely focused on the equality of every single individual. If you are a woman in a situation like Betty, and Betty, I sympathise with you, so I guess my answer to you is this. We have to make sure that the story we are telling ourselves about our equality and about ourselves to others is the one we want. We have to be sure that we are teaching our children that we are all equal, all of us. We have to be absolute. And we have to talk about it and act as though it's a no-brainer and that we should all be already being treated equally. I think that could be the way to make a change. It's going to take time, but won't it be a great world when we actually get there? Our last question today is from Ben. He says, I hear so much talk about people being entrepreneurs, and it's so glamorized, but I really don't understand it. And it seems to me that half these people are just starting little businesses or doing something in their garage or are fed up with their jobs. What do you think about this whole thing of being an entrepreneur and just deciding to be one? We do hear so much chit-chat about being entrepreneurs, Bob. We hear people say they're going to be one, they've made up their mind to no longer be employed, but to be an entrepreneur instead. I can actually think of very few true entrepreneurs that I know. I know small business owners, people in startups, which we've glamorized as well, or new businesses, or they're expanding their businesses, diversifying, scaling, whatever, but not many are real undeniable entrepreneurs. Here's my take on what it means to be an entrepreneur. I actually believe you're born like that. You have a fire in you that you cannot quench, no matter how many times you determine to get a nice, safe little job working for someone else. That never works. You just can't maintain it because there are ideas and concepts bubbling in your brain all the time. You can't suddenly say I was born with blue eyes, but I've decided to be a green-eyed person. That's never going to happen. Although I do allow for the odd miracle. In my opinion, you're an entrepreneur in your DNA, in your bones, because you can't help yourself. You must be constantly thinking up some clever thing, and then you must try and do it. What happens with time is that you get better at filtering, and you know the ideas that will work and actually be successful. You become an expert sifter of pros and cons. And if you're really smart, you learn to look at the numbers early on, so you're not just going with the concept, but you've actually seen whether something can add up or not. People sort of glorify being an entrepreneur, which I think is silly. They're just people who can't help themselves. But they should be given space to explore and maybe just a bit of encouragement, because they're the people who bring in change. I think they're no more special than anyone else. But it's important that we allow them to do their thing, because they think up stuff that is potentially game-changing. They have the drive to do it. They arrive in life already equipped with ridiculous optimism and enormous drive. And we must not rain on their parade, because they are capable of making the future a better place for all of us. And when they're successful, they provide jobs for people and opportunities and new thinking and a better way to live. Sometimes it's better to talk things down and then over-deliver. So it might be better to say, I'm thinking of starting a new business, rather than I'm an entrepreneur, so step aside. One thing entrepreneurs get used to is falling over and having to pick themselves up, or getting stuck on an issue and having to get unstuck. They have to work mostly alone and against the odds, and they have to work to change things that have been in the status quo for a long time. And that's no fun to do by yourself. Most entrepreneurs have an upward battle until they've achieved success. Most don't get respect until they've achieved success. They're just people who have ideas before that. But when their ideas ignite, they are considered to be heroes. That's just how we are, and that's how we see each other. We have to prove something before we're given full acknowledgement. One thing I do notice, if you're asking yourself, am I one of these people? If you are overtly, absolutely, outrageously positive, you could be an entrepreneur, because no one can be one if they feel negatively about things or they feel they are a victim. The two things just don't mix. They're like oil and water. Entrepreneurs are positive and optimistic. It's just the way they're wired. They arrive like that. Of course, everybody has flat moments, but if many of you are trying to get something new off the ground, your default place as an entrepreneur is that you bob back up to the top again and again and again. So we need entrepreneurs to make stuff happen and to create good change in life, but they're no different from anybody else. Right, well, that's the end of our session today. Here's our word from the universe to finish. I never change my mind. Remember that. It's you who change your minds. That's okay. It's how you're designed, to have the privilege to make a new choice. But if you stand strong in a choice you have made, I'm there standing with you, creating and building with you, pulling your future into this very moment. Thank you. Till next time.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.